Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
We're going to be in Genesis 24 today. This is the beautiful account of getting a wife for Isaac. You know, in the scriptures, Isaac seems to be a more passive man, much less aggressive than his son Jacob. And maybe there's something to the fact that he was very attached to his mother. We're going to learn in this chapter he was still pining her loss 3 years after her death. He needed a strong, godly woman, and boy, Rebecca seems to be it. Let's look at chapter 24. It's quite a few verses, but some of them are very repetitive, and we won't do them twice. This repetitive nature of some of this literature is very characteristic of Oriental literature. A repetition of many elements is found in the Babylonian Genesis and the Gilgamesh epic and on and on. It's kind of a characteristic of literature. Now, Abraham was old, advanced in age. We learn from chapter 25:20 that Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah. We also learn from chapter 21:5 that Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. So if you configure those, Abraham seems to be 140 years old. He's going to live several more years. I don't think he's going to be this is close to his death, but I do think that he was getting older. And the Lord had blessed Abram in every way. If you look at verse 35, when the servant tries to describe all of the resources of his master Abram, he just goes on and on and on, and they always attribute it to God. Notice the covenant name for God. It's the word Lord in all caps, which speaks of Yahweh. And I agree with the rabbis when they say this is God connected with His mercy in the covenant. And Elohim is God connected with the power as creator. I think that fits well. I like that better in JEDP source criticism. Now, notice if you look where it says that Abram said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he owned. When it says the oldest here, now this term doesn't mean he was numerically older than all the rest. It simply is a word used over 100 times in the Bible for someone in a place of authority. Let me give you a few places where it's used like that. Genesis 50, verse 7, and Isaiah 3, 2. So it's not so much the oldest, but the one in highest authority. This one was over all of Abraham's house. Not a slave, but a servant. Now notice where it mentions that most commentators think that this man is the Eliezer of Damascus mentioned in chapter 15, 2. If that's true, we see the ultimateness of this man's heart as he was the potential heir, but now Isaac has come. And with Isaac getting married, he'll almost for certain be cut out of the inheritance. But I want to tell you, this servant is a godly man. He just is one of the, how they say it in the movies, he's kind of a supporting actor. He's the most attractive supporting actor anywhere in the Bible, except possibly for Barnabas, in my opinion. Now, let's look again then. Please place your hand under my thigh. Now, my goodness, what does that mean? Well, I want to tell you, we have no historical precedence for this. It's used one other time in the Bible, in Genesis 47:29, in connection with Joseph and Jacob. I really think that that's an adoption procedure in 47:29. It seems to be a symbol for the descendants of someone. You might want to see some other places that's used in 46:26, in Exodus 1:5, and Judges 8:30. You might want to see that. I do think, though, that it is a symbol of adoption in Genesis 48, and you might want to compare that, where he passed Ephraim Manasseh under his loins or through his legs, a symbol of adoption. This has something to do with that. Now, there have been a lot of theories about this because no one knows. Let me give you a few. Some say it represents the covenant, because really it's talking about the genitals, and the genitals, of course, have been circumcised, a sign of God's covenant provision. So a swearing by the covenant. Now that's what the Targum of Jonathan says and Rashi. Others say no, it's swearing by the descendants, because the power of the line was in the loins, that the children come out of the loins, okay? So it's a symbol of descendants, and therefore refers ultimately to the Messiah, the promised one. And that's what Jerome, Augustine, and Luther say. Now, another possibility is that it refers to the the lordship of Abraham, that this man was a servant to Abraham. And that's what Eben Ezra and Calvin say. Now, you can pay your nickel and take your choice. Verse 3, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and earth. Now, curse the word Lord, the word Yahweh, the covenant name. But it's combined here with the Elohim, the Elohim of heaven and earth. Well, boy, this sounds like monotheism to me. It's hard to know about Abraham. Did he believe these other gods existed? Was he a henotheist, which means other gods may exist, but the only God for him was Yahweh? I don't really know, but I disagree with the fact that monotheism did not fully develop until the 8th century prophets. There's a strong hint that Abraham is learning that this is the only true God that he has been contacted by. Now, in verse 3 it says, and you shall not take a wife for my sons from the daughters of the Canaanites. Now, why? Well, it must go back to the revelation that was given to him about the judgment of the Canaanite nations in chapter 15, verses 13 through 16. Because, tell you the truth, he had met some great Canaanite people. Melchizedek is a Canaanite person. Abimelech is a great Canaanite person. And so I really think it can't be because of the current friend. He even has a friend who let him stay at the Oaks of Mamre who was an Amorite. And all of these seem to be very friendly with Abraham and believe in the Lord. So it must have been the projected curse and their gradual disintegration into great sin. Verse 4, but you shall go to my country, he's still speaking of Ur of the Chaldees, and to my relatives, his brother Nahor particularly, because his other brother had died, the father of Lot. You see Nahor mentioned back in chapter 11, verses 27 through 31. Now, and the servant said to him, suppose the woman will not be willing to follow me to this land. Now, he's kind of bringing up something just in case. He wants to kind of cover all the bases. I really think what we have here is Abraham saying, if she won't come back, you're not bound. Abraham wants her to be willing to leave her parents and her land, as he had to do at the call of God, and follow in faith God's calling. And so I think that's the stipulation. Notice the servant says in the second part of verse 5, should I take your son back to the land from where you came? And look at the emphatic denial in verse 5. Verse 6. Then Abram had said to him, beware lest you take my son back there. Now why? Well, some say he's worried about the polytheism that probably was still in Nahor's family. Others say no. Because of verse 8, the promise is connected with the land of Canaan, not the land of Mesopotamia. And I think that's true. Because the promise is repeated. I'll give you this land where you sojourn. It's in chapter 12, verse 7, chapter 13, verse 15, chapter 15, verse 18, and really several more times to the other patriarchs. Verse 7. And Yahweh, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my birth, and who spoke to me and who swore to me, saying, to your descendants I'll give this land. And there's all those references I just gave you. He will send his angel before you, and you will take a wife for my son from there. Now, you see, I think he believed God would work it out. Everything else God had promised him worked out. Isaac was born and on and on. I think he knew this woman was going to be connected with the promise of many descendants. She needed to be a godly woman. And so I think Abraham had great faith that God would work it out. I think it's important, this word, his angel. Now, many times we've seen how the angel of the Lord comes into these passages. And it's obviously a personification of God. But it's mentioned here as simply the angel, or the representative that performs God's will. But if a woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be free from this oath. Only do not take my son back there. Repeats it twice, boy. Don't take him back there. So the servant placed his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. Okay, Abraham didn't want him just to say you would. He wanted a man's oath. Okay? Now, notice in verse 10, the servant took 10 camels from the camels of his master. Now, there have been much historical haranguing over this, that camels weren't really domesticated until later, but that's just not true. We have found they weren't used in caravans until much later, but the truth is they were domesticated during the patriarchal period. So he's going to take 10 camels, a large number. I guess if you want a date for the large caravans of camels, it would be around 1200 B.C. And he took these good things, going to be the diary and the things he's going to impress Rebekah with, of his master in his hand, and he arose and went to Mesopotamia to the city of Nahor. Now, Mesopotamia It's the in my marginal note of our New American Standard Bible, it says Amram of the Two Rivers. Now in the Bible, there's apparently several countries called Amram. This would be over toward the headwaters of the Tigris Euphrates. Some say no, it's more up to the north of Haran. We're not sure exactly where this is, where Nahor settled. It took about a month to make this journey, but it's covered in one verse here. Bang, he's there. let's see. And he made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at evening time, when the time of women to go out to draw water. That was his purpose, to find a lady. So he went to the place. He knew the way ladies would congregate. The camels knelt down, and he begins to pray. And this servant prays such a beautiful prayer, such a sincere prayer. Oh, you can just see the man's faith exuding from what he talks about from God. Now, Luther said he prayed too specifically and was trying to lead God, but I don't see that at all. Boy, he does tell God what he expects, and he tells God what he wants, and he tells God what Abraham says, and he tells God how he could know. He wants to make sure he doesn't make any mistakes, and his faith is so evident. Now, he said, "Oh Lord," by the way, he prays three times in this brief chapter. What a great man of faith. "Oh Lord, Yahweh, the covenant God, the God of my master." Now some said, well, that means he wasn't his God. No, that's not at all what it means. If you look at verse 26, where he calls God Yahweh in relation to himself, you see that can't be the issue. But he does know where the covenant promises are, and they are in Abraham, not in himself. "Please grant me success today and show me hesed, loving kindness." Now, I'm going to cover this very important word when I come to verse 27. So it's the word loving kindness or favor, and I'll cover it in depth when I get to verse 27. "Behold, I'm standing by the spring, and the daughters of men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now, may it be the girl to whom I say, please let me let down your jar so that I may drink." And by the way, I want to say this is very characteristic of Mesopotamia. In Egypt, the women carry these water jars on their head. But in Mesopotamia, on their shoulder, on their hip. It just fits the historicity of the account so well. So he gives some stipulations, and not only him to drink, but offers to drink, let his camels drink. And friends, 10 thirsty camels can just drink a lot of water when you got to walk down the stairs to the well, because most of these were in the bottom of a wadi. She had to walk down the stairs, get a pitcher full, I don't know how many gallons it held, walk back up, put it in a rock trough, and let 10 thirsty camels drink. And all the while, there's these other servants standing around. Doo-dah, doo-dah. We learned as many of them in verse 32. This lady had to be willing to do that for a stranger. He's building into his prayer the kind of characteristics he's looking for in a wife for Isaac. And looking for a strong lady, too, to heft that water up and go down those stairs several times. Okay. Look at verse 15. "Came about when he had finished speaking, behold, Rebekah." Now, Rebekah, we learned about her back in chapter 22, verses 20 through 24, and she was very beautiful. Look at verse 16. "So was Sarah," chapter 12, verse 11. Rebekah is called beautiful in chapter 26, verse 7 also. And she's going to say this very thing he asked for. He must have just thanked the Lord right there again when she did it. Not only is she going to have physical strength, not only is she going to have kindness, which is obvious, but other things are going to be caught about her in verse 16. She's going to be very beautiful and a virgin that no man had had relations with. So the beauty and the virginity are also some added characteristics here. Notice, then the servant ran to meet her. I got so tickled reading the rabbis. They said he ran to meet her because when she went down to the well, the water rose up to meet her. Oh, croak. Well, I don't think that's true. But he ran, he was a servant, and he just ran up to her. I must have surprised her, this man running up to her, and asked her the question, and she gave him the water and offered for the camels to drink and on, and everything worked out fine. So he gave her, look at in verse 22, he gave her a gold ring weighing half a shekel and two bracelets. Now, we know from history, the women of that day loved to wear bracelets. They wore them up their arms, almost up their elbows. Now, it may surprise you, and I know this is going to sound gross some of you ladies, but this is a nose ring, not an engagement ring like you think. And it's a nose ring that weighed half a shekel. Go ahead and just pull your old nose down. We know this half a shekel from Exodus 38:26. And we know it's a nose ring from verse 47. You might want to look there. And also from Isaiah 3:21, Ezekiel 16:12, and Proverbs 11:22. So Rebekah had a big gold nose ring. Mercy sakes. Well, he got so far about the questions about He was looking for strength in a woman, kindness in a woman. Now, he found out that Rebecca had that. This seems to be the answer of his prayer. But the last thing he has to find out is, what family does she belong to? Now, he gives her these things. Maybe he just held them before he asked her the question about her family. But she says, and she draws out a pretty good lineage, I am the daughter of Bethuel. Now, he's mentioned back in chapter 22, 20 through 24, and his name means a man of God. Oh, my. Wonderful. He's the son of Milcah, not the concubine, but the wife, whom she bore to Nahor. And he said to her, we have plenty of both straw and feed and room to lodge in. So the man bowed down and began to pray again. It was just overwhelming that God had answered his prayer so specifically, so quickly. And boy, he just thanks the Lord. Now, in this prayer, verse 27, are two of the most significant words used in the Bible of God. Notice where it says loving kindness. Now, if you have King James, I think it'll be mercy. And your translation may differ. It says, who has not forsaken his loving kindness and his truth to my master. Now, the word truth is the word emeth. It's a form of the word amen. Let's do hesed first. Hesed means loving kindness. It's used in several different ways in Scripture. Let me give you a few because it's so beautiful. It's used in the sense of to save from one enemies. It's used in the sense of to save from death. It's used in the sense to turn someone toward the Word of God. Psalms 109:26, Psalms 119:41, 119:76, and several others. It's also used for covenant keeping, God's faithfulness, God's loyalty. Deuteronomy 7:9, Deuteronomy 7:12, 1 Kings 8:23, Nehemiah 1:5, Nehemiah 9:32, Daniel 9:4. God can be depended on. That's the idea here. Oh, my. It's a wonderful word of His loving kindness and loyalty. It also can be used of the extent, how it goes to eternity. And I've got so many references here. I don't know how many I can give to you. Look at the notes. I'm going to try to put some of them on the monitor. 1 Chronicles 16, 2 Chronicles 5, just more than I can name. But, oh, look at getting your concordance. And you see that this trustworthiness, this kindness is from eternity to eternity. Oh, it's a God we can trust. Now, the word truth is very, very important because it becomes the Old Testament background to the word faith that becomes so prominent in Romans chapter 4. Now, it's translated by three English words, faith, hope, and believe. But the primary focus is on the trustworthiness, not of the person, but of God. The trustworthiness of God. Oh, my, it's a wonderful word. And let me give you a few places it's used. Habakkuk 2:4 is where it's used in the sense of Paul picks up on. But it's used so often in the Psalms of God's trustworthiness. Psalms 25:10, Psalms 40 verse 11, Psalms 57:4, Psalms 61:8, Psalms 65:11, Psalms 89:15, Psalms 115:1, Psalms 138:2. Oh my, a God who can be depended on. And that's what the servant says right here. Now, the Lord has guided me in the way. Now, the way here, of course, is a way of speaking of the way of faith. In earlier lessons, I've talked to you about in chapter 18:15, where it seems to be a lifestyle. And yeah, I might want to go back to that just for a minute and pick up a couple of things there for you. Put most of my notes back in chapter 18. Notice, if you would, Judges 2:22 uses this term in that way, and also Psalms 119:1. It becomes the title for the early church, the way. Here's a few references. Acts 9:2, Acts 18:25 and 26, Acts 19:9 and 23, Acts 22:4, and Acts 24:14 and 22. There's some allusion to that when Jesus said, I am the way, in John 14:6. Wonderful. Now, Laban's mentioned in verse 29. He comes on the scene in Genesis 29 through 31. Now, we see something of him here. He's going to be the source of Jacob's wife, okay? Wives, Leah and Rachel. Now, notice here, it's going to be the idea, I'm not sure if he saw the gold nose ring and the braces and said, aha. He may have been, the rabbis are so down on him. They said, he's always been a cheat. And you see it, when the girl had the gold, he went out to meet the guy. Well, that's maybe too hard, because in verse 30 it also says he heard that he was a relative. So let's give the guy the benefit of the doubt and say he was just glad to see a relative, okay? And he said, come in, blessed of the Lord. Now here he's using the word for Yahweh. Did he hear the servant's prayer? Is he a Yahwehist? Well, there's some wonder about, was Nahor and his family also worshipers of Yahweh? If you look at Genesis 31:53, it almost makes you think that Nahor was not a polytheist, but a Yahwehist like his brother Abraham. But I just can't be certain. Now, let me skip down a bit, because verses 34 through 41 are the same thing that Abraham said to his servant. Now, notice in verse 36 it says, Sarah bore him a child in his old age. Now, why that? Well, it may surprise you, but Abraham's son was only one generation away from Abraham and Nahor. They were brothers. But Rebekah is two generations. They might have been curious of why is Abraham's son wanting to marry Nahor's granddaughter. And so the servant says Abraham was real old when he had this first child, and they're about the same age is what I think it's talking about. Now, if you look down at verse 41, the word oath appears twice. It's a different word than is used the word swear at the beginning of this chapter, but it does show that what Abraham said, I want you to swear, and if the servant didn't fulfill, there was a curse involved, and that this word can mean curse or blessing. Okay, curse or oath or swear. Okay? Now, in verses 42 through 48 is exactly the same things repeated in verse 11 through 27. This servant goes over completely everything that happened, both in his prayer and what Rebekah did and what Abraham said. Boy, he just lays it all out on the table. Okay? Now, in verse 43, here's something I want to pick up if I could. The word maiden is used, the word alma that's used in Isaiah 7:14, which is usually translated virgin. Now, the word virgin is used over here in verse 16. The Septuagint only uses the word virgin for alma in two places, Isaiah 7:14 and right here in verse 43. I think that's interesting. Okay, let's see. We've got the nose ring in verse 47. In verse 48, we have the Lord who guided me in the right way, and that's a form of this word amen or emoth, meaning true, the true way. Now, in verse 50, it has Laban before Bethuel. Well, some say Bethuel was dead or sick. But from the Nuzi tablets, we have learned that sometimes the brother was in charge of the sister's wedding. And that seems to be true here. Now, some translations really foul up verse 50 when they say, so we cannot speak to you bad or good. Look at King James. Even New American Standard is not very well. This is a Hebrew idiom that seems to mean this. Since the Yahweh has spoken, what can we say? Now, that seems to be the thrust of it. Because look at verse 51. It says, as the Lord has spoken. So, it's not contradictory. It's complementary in the sense of the Hebrew idiom. Notice that this is the third time in verse 52 this boy is going to kneel down and pray. This boy is a worshiper. Worship three in public. Whenever he wants to thank the Lord, he does it. What a great soul, don't you think? Now, notice that he brought out these articles of silver. Now, the word articles means finished things in Hebrew, so it'd be garments and jewelry and maybe some kind of furniture, but all kinds of things. He gets into Rebekah first. Boy, her eyes lit up, don't you know? Woo-hoo, I bet that was fun for her. And he also gave precious things to her brother and mother, which fits the Nuzi tablets quite well. This is kind of in the sense of a diary. We see that some in Genesis 29:18, where Jacob had to work for Rachel and Leah. It's not that they purchased their wives, but it was the sense of a diary, okay? Showing their value, I think. Now, notice the servant says, send me away. That's kind of cultural. He had to let them send him before he could leave. Now, look at verse 55. It says, but a few days, they want her girl to stay 10 days at home. Now, the Samaritan Pentateuch says, stay a month. But, boy, the servant says, no, I need to get back. And they're going to ask the girl. That in verse 50, they're going to ask Rebecca, what do you want to do? She says, I'm ready to go. Now, this also seems to fit directly into the culture of the day where the girl needed to be asked about the marriage. And this seems to just fit the Nuzi tablets. Well, her mother and brother just really, by the way, they send a maid with her in verse 59. From verse 35:8, we learn her name is Deborah. And from the Hebrew word, it may mean that she's the one that suckled Rebecca. And she lived a long time, even down to Jacob's day. Now look at verse 60. Here is a kind of a prophecy or prayer on her behalf. And it's so similar to what God has said in Genesis 22:17. They're going to have a lot of descendants. And the second part is they're going to have military victory over their enemies. Then Rebekah rose with her maids, plural, more than just Deborah, and they mounted the camels. Maybe that's why he brought 10 of them, for Rebekah and the maids to ride back in. So the servant took Rebekah and departed. Now Isaac had come from going in, and this word refers to a well. It's the well we saw in chapter 16:14, where Hagar was so thankful God had heard her prayer and answered and brought her some water. It's the well of the living one who sees me. Well, there's where Isaac was. Maybe it had sacred connotations because the Lord appeared there. But maybe Abraham had moved. We don't know. But he was down in the Negev, the south country. Isaac went out to meditate. Now, that's what the Septuagint and the Vulgate have. It's possible this word means to meditate because this is the only form of this word in the whole Hebrew Bible. But a similar word means to meditate in Psalms 105:2 and 119:15-23. But it's very close to a Hebrew word that means to walk around and kind of mumble to oneself in a depressed state. And some link this up to him being distressed over his mother's death in verse 67, and I think that may be true. Now, the Targums and the Samaritan Pentateuch and Rashi and Kimchi and Luther all translate this, he went there to pray. And that's what Isaac is. So he may have been praying, but lo and behold, here comes this beautiful woman mounted on a camel. Look what happened. It's so neat. Rebekah saw this guy walking the field, and she says, "Hey, is that him?" And the guy says, "Yeah, that's him." Hebrew word says she fell off the camel, but she didn't fall off the camel. She jumped off that camel real quick, because we know from the culture that when a woman meets a man, she got off the camel she was riding, or a donkey or whatever, and she covered her face with a veil. Now, the veil seems to be something like what people do before they're married. The women covered their face, maybe the whole the top of the head, before they got married. After that, they didn't wear it too much. There's not very much use of the veil in the Old Testament. The only kind we have is when Tamar dressed up like a prostitute to trick Judah into giving her a seed, because it was kind of like a Levirate marriage. And that's in chapter 38, verses 14 and 15. So the servant told Isaac all the things that had happened. They were just standing there talking, and I'm sure Rebekah was just sitting there listening in, don't you? And Isaac heard all this, he knew she was the one, boy. And so Isaac brought her into his mother, Sarah's tent. Listen, Sarah had been dead 3 years. He was still, I think, mourning over her. All her possessions. Don't you know she had a royal tent? Fancy stuff. He brought Rebekah right in, let her take over control of that whole thing. The rabbis say that the cloud used to hover over the tent to keep it shaded, and the flower always kept rejuvenating itself. When Sarah died, it quit. But when Rebekah came in, it started doing it again. Well, I don't know, but he brought her to his mother's tent. What an act of honor. And the marriage was very simple. He saw some people. People saw him bring him in. It says that he became his wife, and he loved her. That's kind of the way it was then. In our day, you love her, you make her your wife. Then she becomes your wife because parents do it, and he loved her, and thus Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Well, I've enjoyed being with you. Pretty good love story, huh? See you again, same time, same place, next week. God bless you.